A socially awkward math genius sits in a British prison cell, serving one of the longest white-collar sentences in UK history. His crime? Doing what everyone around him was doing, manipulating a financial benchmark that affects trillions of dollars in loans, mortgages, and investments worldwide. Tom Hayes became the face of the LIBOR scandal, but his story reveals something far more unsettling. What happens when an entire industry operates without a moral compass, and one person pays the price for everyone's sins? Hayes wasn't your typical Wall Street villain. He couldn't read social cues, obsessed over routines, and preferred making sausages at home to networking at fancy restaurants. Yet this unlikely character orchestrated one of finance's biggest conspiracies, not because he was uniquely evil, but because he was uniquely good at a game everyone was playing. His downfall exposes how financial systems can corrupt even the most literal-minded individuals when institutional culture normalizes the unthinkable. Hayes's journey from isolated schoolboy to trading prodigy began after his parents' divorce. While classmates played sports, he calculated probabilities. His grandfather, Raymond, a stockbroker, recognized this gift and introduced him to finance. At Royal Bank of Scotland's training program, Hayes absorbed an unspoken truth. Compliance was theater. Profit was paramount. This wasn't taught explicitly. It was simply the culture everyone breathed. Hayes specialized in Japanese interest rates, a market most found tediously dull. His desk resembled the Matrix, 12 monitors displaying cascading data. While colleagues relied on instinct, Hayes transformed trading into applied mathematics. His success attracted UBS, offering over $600,000 annually plus free Tokyo housing. When he left RBC, they discovered his portfolio was far larger than realized and lost $7 million unwinding positions. Yet UBS barely reacted to RBC's warnings, placing Hayes on probation. This taught him a dangerous lesson. Banks preferred minimizing problems over addressing them. To understand Hayes's crime, you need to understand LIBOR and how something so important could be so vulnerable. The London Interbank Offered Rate wasn't designed by regulators or economists. It emerged almost accidentally in 1967 when a banker needed to solve a practical problem, protecting lenders from interest rate fluctuations on an $80 million loan to Iran's Shah. The solution was elegant. Banks would report their borrowing costs, these numbers would be averaged, and the loan's rate would adjust accordingly. This arrangement eventually became embedded in everything from mortgages to student loans to corporate debt worldwide. By the 1990s, LIBOR underpinned trillions in financial contracts, yet its administration remained shockingly informal. Banks simply phoned in their numbers to Thomson Reuters, where low-level employees calculated averages with minimal oversight. The British Bankers Association assigned oversight to John Ewan, a friendly man who lacked financial expertise and received no formal training. One of global finance's most critical benchmarks was managed by someone learning on the job, overseen by a committee of mid-level bankers who met briefly and wanted to minimize their time commitments. When Chicago's Mercantile Exchange sought to incorporate LIBOR into derivatives in 1996, experts warned about manipulation risks. Regulators dismissed these concerns entirely. This complacency created the perfect environment for exploitation, not by criminal masterminds, but by ordinary traders following incentives their institutions created. On his first day at UBS, Hayes discovered submitters deliberately seated beside traders whose positions depended on their LIBOR submissions, designed for cooperation. When he asked broker Terry Farr to get LIBOR's write up, nobody questioned it. This was standard practice. With UBS's submitters scattered globally, Hayes turned to London broker Daryl Reed at ICAP. Reed's colleague Colin Goodman, nicknamed Lord LIBOR, sent daily emails with suggested LIBORs that submitters at many banks simply copied. Hayes exploited this influence, with Reed relaying his preferred rates to Goodman in exchange for curry lunches and fancy meals. Hays systematically expanded beyond UBS, enlisting traders at competing banks. When he approached J.P. Morgan trader Stuart Wiley, Wiley declined because his submitters had gone all, "We need to be independent," revealing how unusual independence had become. The manipulations seemed victimless to insiders. Hays never considered people like Jeffrey Layton, a Florida computer specialist who lost thousands betting rates would decline while traders pushed them higher. Hays viewed markets as closed systems, where he battled only sophisticated professionals. What enabled this wasn't Hays's genius, it was perverse incentives. Brokers earned commissions and recycled 5 to 10% back as entertainment, kickbacks escalating from meals to jets, drugs, and prostitutes. Though Hays spurned lavish entertainment, brokers found other ways. Expensive meals with his girlfriend, family sports tickets, and switch trades with pension funds at advantageous prices. The first crack appeared in April 2008 when Wall Street Journal reporter Carrick Mollenkamp published LIBOR Fog: Bankers Cast Doubt on Key Rate Amid Crisis. The banking industry fought back aggressively, with Citigroup blaming one of its own researchers when LIBOR rates jumped. Vincent McGonigal at the CFTC launched an investigation despite limited resources. Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner raised concerns with Bank of England Governor Mervyn King proposing reforms. The British Bankers Association strategized to stall inquiries. Hays's world unraveled after his 2009 move to Citigroup. He received $3.2 million on his first day and earned $50 million for the bank by April 2010. But market volatility turned a $40 million profit into a $20 million loss. Desperate, Hays redoubled his manipulation efforts. When Hays pressured colleague Hoshino to request a LIBOR increase, the trader refused, claiming Barclays traders had been arrested for similar behavior. This triggered internal reporting. On September 6th, Hays was fired for attempting to manipulate LIBOR and TIBOR. The betrayals mounted. Hays discovered his friend, Reed, had been lying about influencing LIBOR. He found a UBS document explicitly instructing traders how to manipulate LIBOR submissions, proof this wasn't rogue behavior but company policy. Most devastating, UBS strategically directed investigators toward him, steering attention away from executives who'd encouraged the same behavior. Hays initially cooperated with authorities, admitting he was a serial offender whose trading book directly benefited from manipulation. But as he learned manipulation was systemic, he questioned his guilty plea. A psychologist diagnosed him with Asperger syndrome, explaining he likely viewed LIBOR manipulation as acceptable industry practice. The diagnosis clarified much: his inappropriate earnings questions at parties, his obsession with routines and lucky objects, his absolute convictions. During a romantic Easter weekend, Hays disrupted the moment by announcing steak was cheaper per unit in individual portions, quintessentially Hays, seeing patterns where others saw moments. Judge Jeremy Cook ruled Hays's Asperger's couldn't explain why he didn't recognize his actions as wrong. The jury unanimously convicted him on all 8 counts, delivering a crushing 14-year sentence, one of Britain's longest for white-collar crime. The contrast was stark. While Hays sat in prison, colleagues who'd participated in identical behavior remained free and employed. Nawamichi Tamura, who'd instructed Hays to manipulate LIBOR, continued at UBS. Karsten Kengeder became CEO of Deutsche Börse. Most telling, 6 brokers Hays allegedly conspired with were acquitted in a separate trial, leaving Hays alone in prison while his supposed co-conspirators walked free. Hays manipulated LIBOR, but so did countless others who faced no consequences. He followed incentives his employers created and operated within a culture that normalized manipulation, lacking the social awareness to recognize when everyone's doing it wasn't a defense. UBS transformed from a conservative Swiss institution to a global risk-taking powerhouse, where collaboration meant traders pressuring submitters to manipulate rates. When Hays asked submitters to adjust numbers, he was following company culture, not defying it. Regulators focused on haze while larger systemic issues went unaddressed. Haunted by the Arthur Andersen case, where criminal charges cost 20,000 jobs, the Justice Department became hesitant to indict large companies, creating a too-big-to-jail perception. Hayes became their winnable case, not because he was uniquely guilty, but because he was uniquely vulnerable. His Asperger's made him literal-minded, unable to navigate the social subtleties that let others deflect blame. In a world where financial manipulation has become routine, who's really the criminal? The socially awkward trader who followed his employer's incentives, or the system that created those incentives, normalized that behavior, then sacrificed one man to protect itself?